listed historic landmark, that would be a big deal. But is this a beautiful Portland structure? No, it doesn't have a whole, even in its day, it didn't have a whole lot of aesthetic appeal. That's not the question, though. It's a contributing structure because it contributes part of the historic story of Northwest Portland, that one of the first women's hospitals in a big working-class neighborhood. That's where it should be. That's an important part of Portland's history. It's not a cute building.
Okay. And then, the neighborhood believes the RH designation for the site is appropriate?
I think so, because with the historic contributing structure designation, a lot can be done with it in terms of use. It's with a historic mitigation plan, commercial. I mean, heck, a law firm. Can you believe that? Would be possible in this building. And I maybe that's a C-class tenant to you or to others in the neighborhood, but it was perfectly fine for Ed Sullivan and Tim Ramis for 30 years.
And that's allowed under the zoning, under the Type 3 historic preservation incentive that other things other than residential can be in a historic contributing structure.
Correct. There's a lot of flexibility there. What's being proposed, no way could come close to being approved.
So one of the, I have some recollection of the whole Blanche House debate, and there were people who felt passionately about the Dirty Duck building, even though it was on the verge of collapse. And what we got instead is the new Blanche House, which, because of the process that the city had in place, had incorporated into it some significant design enhancements. And I would argue it's one of the more attractive buildings in that area.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly could be an anchor for further development, but there were some discrete changes made in the design to make it quite attractive. You make reference to what is to follow in your presentation. And I take it that's because you don't have confidence that Landmarks, if we were to send it back there, could be the place to work those issues out, or you think there's virtually no design post-demolition that would be satisfactory?
I agree with the latter. There's no, with the Dirty Duck, Blanche House was part of the deal to begin with. It was a PDC project. It was very clear what the public benefits were going to be, and they were guaranteed from the beginning. Not historical things, but something that certainly appealed to you and to the people of Portland. There's nothing like that here. You'd be approving a demolition permit, go back and work out the details below, but they've got a demolition permit approval.
Well, let me play devil's advocate with you, because you know that my own personal values, I'd like to see affordable housing for people priced out of the market. But couldn't you make an argument under the statute that there's a public benefit in meeting the housing needs of a community where we have a shortage of available apartments? And isn't that part of the public benefit, even if I might define it as being a more important public benefit to have deeply affordable units?
Well, there'll be people who testify after me, but there is an abundance of housing units in Northwest Portland. This isn't, as opposed to other parts of the city, this is not, you know, low income. They promised to apply for this. They may or may not get it. So that's a completely illusory argument that this will be low income housing at all. I mean, when Commissioner Novick asked who's going to live there, I would expect, first-year associates at Perkins Coie could walk to work at the brewery blocks. I doubt that an architect fresh out of architecture school could afford to live here. So this is not low-income housing by any stretch of the imagination. It doesn't have any of the historical preservation aspects to the proposal or any public incentive that you would say, yeah, this has some possibility. This has nothing to it. This has nothing to it. And that's why we say that if this is approvable, then there isn't a single contributing historic structure in any of your districts that couldn't be demolished or get a demolition permit on exactly the same basis.
I
wanted to follow up, Commissioner, because I think that's the essence of the neighborhood's concern, is that it's just providing the housing that it's zoned for. That's not an additional public benefit to then mitigate for demolishing a contributing structure. So that's where they're making their precedence argument, that if we allow this one without any particular additional thing that's for the additional public good, then any contributing structure would be at risk.
When we come back to our discussion, I'm going to ask Commissioner Fritz, what are some of those public benefits that we should be thinking about in these discussions? Because I agree that it needs to be more than a plaque or something that, as of right, can be built to the zoning code. Let me ask you, while we have you, I'm getting the sense that neither the Landmarks Commission nor the applicant believe that the Landmarks Commission is the ideal place or the likely place to resolve the design issues in this case. Is that a flaw in our statute, and should there be concurrent review by the Design Commission in a case like this?
It always strikes me as weird when you pull in elected officials as a design review that politicizes
course,
the whole
deal. Of
course,
this body of five allows you to sleep well at night, knowing how aesthetically advanced we are. But do you? But it just, as I've been thinking, and that's why I asked my friend Commissioner Fritz earlier, should there be are there circumstances where there should be a minimum concurrent review by design review?
I think we should ask the city attorney that, because the zoning code does specify that it's the Historic Landmarks Commission. Is that correct?
Yes, I assumed you were speaking hypothetically if we were going to change the code at some point, because I don't think that's something that is conceivable under the current code. It's very clear where the review would be.
It just strikes me as odd that we have a body that's looking through one prism. In this case, we've said no for good and sufficient reason, but might, under one action we could take, have to make the design choices, and they've already been pretty candid that it would be hard for them to imagine a building that fit within their original determination. Mm-hmm. And yet that's not their – they bring much value to our public process, but no one believes that they are a substitute for a design review process.
They do historic design review.
They do historic design.
I understand, but this is no longer an historic structure.
Here's what I think you should do or consider.
A historic district, though, that's the key.
Well, that's an overlay, but that's why I was talking out loud about a concurrent review with the Design Commission, because the alternative is, in a case like this, if we did grant it and they couldn't come to an agreement, it does come back to us, and we're the de facto design commission. And I agree with you. I'm not sure that's the right outcome.
And since you raised that question, and when we've had this discussion, I just looked up the current zoning, and it doesn't have a D designation. Is that correct? It's not, yeah.
They could seek to de-designate, but it has to go through the SHPO process to have it de-designated under the district.
So it's under historic design review. It's not under design review design.
Right, right. But what it would be the approach, considering that the only precedent here is the Dirty Duck, and you identified pretty clearly what you were looking for in that case, is to deny this, tell the applicant, these are the kinds of things I'm looking for, that we're looking for in terms of, on balance, that would tip the balance of these competing comprehensive plan provisions. Remember, 12 of them it didn't meet, and 3 of them, including public participation, it didn't violate. So it's not even close. What would tip the balance? The Blanchet House clearly did. You can come up with some other ideas and give that kind of clear direction as part of a denial here, and that's, I think, the best you could do.
What are some of the suggestions you have for us?
You'll hear several over the course of this debate, but the current proposal, which before you right now, is not approvable under your approval criteria, and it would be a radical departure from the only precedent out there, the Dirty Duck. There's no Blanchet House in this whole equation. So there are a lot of people that came witness today, but not speak, and I would just ask them if they're in support of the building, if they would just kind of stand up and give a wave so the city council can see who you all are. They may not speak.
Okay, but good. Thank you. Appreciate
they are that. Here in support of the building.
Thank you very much. Of the building. Yes.
The building where it sits intact.
I understand.
Thank you.
We understand. Thank you very much. Okay, so let's take individuals that are signed up in opposition.
Okay, we have 28 more people signed up.
Okay.
The first three, please come on up, are Tanya March, Tony Schwartz, and Jessica Richman. They'll be followed by Tavo Cruz, Wendy Chung, and Ron Walters.
Okay, you're on first.
Hi, my name is Tanya March. I keep hearing the word demolition by neglect. This is not a case of demolition by neglect. This is a case of vacancy by intent. I did a paper for the Urban Affairs Association. I have a PhD in urban studies from PSU, and it was on condo conversion. The condo conversion along this corridor actually caused a de-densification of this neighborhood. There has been a sharp reduction since the creation of the historic district of density of residences. And I'd be happy to share that at another time, but just while the record's still open, I'd like to have that be entered. And I worked on that paper with Irina Shirkovov, who was the GIS expert. I'm also thinking of the Park 19. When I was first approached, because I was at the time, I've since sold the unit at the Wickersham, I was living there, the Park 19 was an image that was shown to us. The Park 19 gave $100,000 to Cooch Park, and that was not part of the mitigation effort. I'm thinking of the historic plaques of the Trenkman homes that are covered by flower pots. It's an HOA. They could move the pots, but we can't even see the historic markers that are in our neighborhood because they're currently covered. I also know that Mr. Hales was on the city council when the Alphabet Historic District was...
Right, I had to be reminded of that, but
okay.
Yes.
But I actually brought with me some council minutes from April 5th, 6th of 2000, agenda item 486, ordinance number 174327. And John Tess, president of Heritage Consulting Group, who also has testified today, said that he had 200 signatures opposing the designation of the historic district. So I just wanted to make sure that we realize that some of these issues that are here today have been going on for over a decade. Many of the people that are testifying on the same sides that they testified on when we were going through the historic district process for this neighborhood. And a lot of this has to do with buildings that are not individually listed and the understanding of the fabric of a historic district and what makes a historic district. You know, the institution where my kids go to school, MLC school, the old Cooch school, that is an institution. No, it's not residential. No, it's not single story. No, it's not made of wood. But it is part of the fabric of the institutional buildings. And I am going to apologize that I am not staying to the PowerPoint, although I was given the control. I first became aware of this building because when the Central City URA was being discussed, Art DeMuro tasked me with exploring all of the properties that would be impacted by the boundaries at that time, and this property was one of them. So that is when I first became aware of Miss Spalding, the workaholic woman, who in 1918, which is very impressive that a woman would become the founder of an institution in our community. And I also was very aware that next to it is former war housing, which is not being discussed because it is not protected. I had asked at that time that it be protected, and it is currently Section 8 housing, so we will have a net loss of affordable units.
Thank you. Ms. Richmond, welcome back.
Oh, I believe I'm second. Okay, my name is Tony Schwartz. I live at Northwest 1729 Irving Street. I'm a lawyer in town, a sole practitioner, and I live in a house that was built in 1884 by Captain John Cooch. About 20 years ago, I served as a volunteer for the National Trust for Historic Preservation in Washington, D.C., when my father was director of public policy for that outfit. Obviously, I am in opposition to the demolition of this contributing resource at this point for a number of different reasons. But I am here actually to read a letter on behalf of an individual who is a member of the Northwest District Association and a member of its planning commission. I have that letter before me. I'm just going to read straight from it, but it's also in the record. It's from Donald Genasi, and he writes, Mayor Hales and Council, thank you for the opportunity to speak in favor of retaining the Ballon Wright building at Northwest 18th and Hoyt Streets. My name is Donald Genasi. I'm a resident of Northwest Portland, an architect, urban designer, and a professor of architecture at the University of Oregon in the Portland program. I am disturbed at the notion in the demolition application that buildings in a preservation district must in some way be outstanding to be retained. Most cities we consider to be special and have that character are made up of a collection of similar, attractive, but ordinary buildings, competently designed. The majority of buildings were not designed to stand out as special. That is the role for institutional buildings, such as town halls, courthouses, churches, etc. The majority of cities are made up of buildings with integrity, but with little pretense to being special. However, it is this collection of modest buildings that provides a background so the special buildings stand out. Within this background, there are no special buildings. The background also provides shared values and continuity. A city of only special buildings would make for an unrelated and chaotic urban fabric. For this reason, modest buildings with integrity are valuable in any part of the city, but they are especially valuable in preservation districts where they provide the background, the glue that visually holds the district and the city together. We were asked recently to make an unembellished drawing that presented the Ballon Wright building in its original condition. And I have that, and I will also move and just simply introduce it into the record. But this is by Donald Genasi, the letter I'm reading from right now. This is the unembellished drawing that presented the building that's before you in its original condition. While the building was modified over the years by less than sympathetic owners, it would be relatively easy to restore the original facade of the building. It is also true to say that much of the original building still remains, and the cost of such a restoration is small in relation to the value of the building. What the drawing shows is that fully restored, this is a handsome building made of quality materials, providing space for businesses that prefer to be in a neighborhood setting. It exemplifies the character and scale of commercial building and supports the Alphabet neighborhood and the city. To remove this building is to mock Portland's agreed values to retain our valuable built history, which belongs to all of us and our children. It would also contribute to the destruction of the scale and qualities established in our neighborhood. A city that makes no commitment to retain its historical cultures is destined to become a wasteland of unrelated monuments to greed. Thank you, Don Genasi. And I would just quickly say, I would say that you take down this building, it's irreplaceable. It's gone forever. That's obvious. The size and scale of the applicant's building is just enormous compared to the building that I live, a 2.5-story single-family residence. And Hoyt and Irving, which are one-lane streets going opposite directions, it's a nice little neighborhood. And the building of 6 stories, again, size and scale are too big. Density, we have, and I think other individuals can talk to density in the Northwest, the most dense part of the city already, and we have the most available amount of apartment buildings already in this district. Mark Edelin mentioned that there's no economic use for it. As the council knows, Tim Ramis used this as a law firm for 25 years. It's been on vacant. It's been vacant because he couldn't sell it at the price he was asking. I would say that this building is not on its own. It's not out and surrounded by parking lots on its own sort of island. My house and others on Hoyt and Irving, we live in the most densely concentrated portion of the city with historic landmarks. My house is a historic landmark. It's not as if this is just, again, on its own. Please take that into consideration. I would say the law firm received notice. It received notice in 2000 about this. And the lawyers there decided not to object to its becoming contributing. We know that because SHPO's records indicate that it sent notice to the law firm. And finally, with regard to parking lots, there's no notion, Mayor Hales, that this parking lot has to be developed. Why not keep it as an office building with a parking lot there? I know you said lowest use, but within 2 or 3 blocks of my house, we have Miller Paints with a parking lot. We have, of course, the fire department with a parking lot. We have a tool company right behind my house with a parking lot. Parking lots, I guess you would say, are the lowest use, but at the same time, if you keep the building as it is, a historic structure in the district, and allow it to be used for commercial or other uses, the parking lot can benefit that building. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Richmond.
Hi, I'm Jessica Richmond. I agree with the staff report and the letter and the comments from the Historic Landmarks Commission. Commissioner Fish, I would be glad to discuss with you further the idea of a dual process, but it would exceed my 3 minutes, so if you want to ask at the end of it. For nearly 25 years, I've lived one block from this site, and also for nearly 30 years, I was a senior city planner with the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability. I retired last year. And in 2004, I worked on the project that adopted the current demolition review regulations that you're evaluating this proposal against today. At the time, only Commissioner Saltzman was here, so I'd like to offer a little bit of background and context for you. Before they voted, council had multiple discussions about this process and about the criteria. They held several discussions about what should be subject to demo review, and they specifically decided to include contributing resources in the demolition review process. And for many of the reasons that you've just heard about from the Landmarks Commission members and from my neighbor about why contributing resources are important. And they're an integral part of the fabric of the area. Like the Ballow and Wright building, they contribute to the significance and character of the Alphabet Historic District. Without contributing resources, you have a scattering of landmarks, not a historic district. Before they voted, council also held multiple discussions about when it did or didn't make sense to approve demolition, and they focused on two things. One was the takings issue, which isn't a question here, and the other was basically a balancing of public goods, not private goods, not whether it did or didn't meet the comprehensive plan, but an issue of looking at the comp plan goals and policies as a whole and not cherry-picking the ones that this particular project met. The staff report in this case has done an excellent job of looking at those goals and policies as a whole and looking at them and balancing them and giving them some weight. In the Dirty Duck case, there was a great deal of that evaluation, again, looking at public goods, not just would this be an improvement, but would it be public goods? It's clear that council's intent was to preserve buildings just like this one, especially given all of its attributes. In balancing the public goods, it would be an absolute travesty to demolish a historic building to replace it with yet another apartment building, especially in Northwest Portland, where we've got plenty of them. There's no balance there. Preservation supports many goals and policies, while demolition and replacement with another apartment building supports only a few. I urge you to adopt the recommendation of the BDS staff and the Landmarks Commission. Thank you.
Can I ask you a follow-up question?
Yes.
What is your view?
About the process?
Having another regulatory body with expertise helping work out design issues in the appropriate case.
We had a great deal of difficulty creating this process, and it's the only type four, because the only review bodies that can balance comp plan goals are the hearings officer and city council. But city council has said they're not the experts on design. The Landmarks Commission and the Design Commission are. So we looked at having something where the Landmarks Commission would first approve a new design, but that seemed to pre-approve the demolition. And to ask an applicant to go through all the work and the multiple iterations that it usually takes to get approval, either through design review or historic design review, and then come to council for a decision on the demolition after that kind of outlay and hear no, seemed to be actually an inefficient process. The criteria, the merits of development that could replace the demolished resource either as specifically proposed or as allowed under the zoning code. And so it does give the applicant the choice of proposing a design and taking that to the Landmarks Commission, which in this case they did, or of simply saying something like, I'm going to go for three stories and I'm going to provide a soup kitchen and transitional housing and have it more broadly.
Let me just say it's late in the day and it's been a very long council meeting, but thank you for the history lesson. It's helpful for the context.
Well, us old people are good for something.
Thank you, Jessica.
Thank you all.
Okay, next.
Next three are Tavo Cruz, Wendy Chung, and Ron Walters, and they'll be followed by Vicky Skyra, Paige Stockwell, and Joselle Johnson.
Okay, Mr. Cruz, I think you're first.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Gustavo Cruz, and I am president of the Northwest District Association, or the NWDA. I support the recommendations of the staff report and the Historic Landmarks Commission regarding the Ballow and Wright, or Buck Prager, building, and I oppose the demolition of this historic structure. Northwest Portland is one of the most diverse, vibrant neighborhoods in our city, and much of its charm is attributable to its historic character. The Alphabet District is a key feature of the area, and the neighborhood includes numerous homes and other structures that reflect the history of Portland, including the streetcar era during which the Ballow and Wright building was constructed. As other speakers have noted, this building may lack some of the ornate charm associated with the Queen Anne-style homes and former mansions located nearby, but it contributes to the overall character of our neighborhood. A unique blend of historic structures draws residents and visitors to Northwest Portland, and it has fostered a robust level of commercial activity over many years. Our neighborhood is one of the most walkable and livable parts of Portland, and much of that is due to the mixture of pedestrian-friendly historic buildings spread throughout the district. Unfortunately, the proposed development cannot substitute for the authenticity of the Ballo and Wright building. The new structure would dwarf the historic homes located nearby and add little to the character or livability of the immediate surroundings. Although additional housing stock is a worthy and necessary goal, it does not need to come at the expense of the neighborhood's historic character. The overwhelming sentiment among NWDA members is that the existing structure should be saved, and if development is to occur, it should incorporate the Ballo and Wright building in a creative way. An online petition to save the building has gathered 1,739 signatures over the last 3 weeks, with more being added every day. As you can see from the testimony today, many neighbors feel very strongly about this, and they have been willing to donate their time, money, energy, and expertise in an effort to save this building. I urge City Council to preserve this contributing structure in a historic neighborhood and to check the demolition trend that threatens to irreparably damage the historic character of our city. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Welcome.
Mayor Hales, commissioners, thank you for having us here and allowing us to take the time to talk to you about this important issue in our neighborhood. My name is Wendy Chung. I'm a member of the NWDA Board and the NWDA Planning Committee. I live at 1729 Northwest Irving Street in an individually listed landmark, or I'm sorry, not a landmark, an individually listed historic building, one of the Victorians, the blue one, second from the end, that would be immediately across the street from this development. You know, I had some remarks that I had planned to deliver today, and then I got to listening to the comments and the questions that have been presented thus far, and I wanted to sort of I've been trying to understand why my dear friends and neighbors, some of whom, in fact, are here or have testified on the adjacent blocks, would be opposed to preserving this building in favor of a six-story apartment building. And then when Commissioner Fish started asking about the approval criteria, it occurred to me, I figured it out. The reason everybody is concerned about this, about not, because it seems like a pretty, it's not a close call. Demolishing a historic resource, putting up a 4 to 6 story building in a neighborhood that's already overly, you know, has the highest density in the city is based on city records. Barry Manning just issued a study, right, showing that Northwest Portland has the highest density in the city of Portland. It has a vacancy rate almost double of that in the rest of the city. So it seemed to be kind of a no-brainer to me. Now I realize it's because everybody's concerned about the notion that there would be no development on that lot if we didn't do this, didn't allow the demolition. And that's, in fact, what the applicants have said to our neighbors, right? Because it's scary. You don't want a vacant building there. Nobody does. But the fact of the matter is, as Commissioner Fritz pointed out, the applicant is not arguing that there's no economic value to the building. He's arguing that he can't have the maximum value that he can get out of it by erecting an 82-unit building. That's the issue, right? So one point I'd like to make is that applicant has said that development would not occur without demolition. So in other words, is it going to continue to be vacant? Is it going to continue to attract vagrants? Is it going to continue to be undeveloped? Well, I think that's kind of up to the applicant, right? And then as for who determines whether or not something can be done on those other lots, that's the Design Commission or actually Landmarks because it's in a historic district. And it only comes to you if it's appealed, if they don't like what they saw. So I'm a lawyer too, but I'm not a land use lawyer. And I only point that out because I found the regulations baffling and incomprehensible. And so when our attorney said to you that you aren't and I don't know if he didn't say it this way, but you weren't qualified to make the decision, frankly, I have spent a year and a half poring over these regulations, and it's almost incomprehensible. The one thing I will point out, though, is that the eastern edge of the neighborhood that Mr. Ramis and one of the other applicants mentioned, that he had helped develop, describes quarter block and fine grain development. It doesn't describe half block development as described by the applicant. You might notice that the photograph looks very similar to something that the applicants presented. This is out of the adopted Northwest District Plan. This is C20. This is page C20 showing a photograph of the very site that we're talking about as an example of fine grain quarter block development. So this notion that this kind of a development is what was contemplated by the Northwest District Plan that Mr. Ramos helped to write is completely lacks credibility. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales, commissioners. My name is Ron Walters. I live at 2057 Northwest Overton Street. I, too, struggle with understanding how density and additional market rate housing is a public benefit. Northwest Portland already has the highest density of housing in the city. It already exceeds the long-term density goals of long-term planning for the city. Between 2011 and 2015, we'll have added more than 1,500 housing units in the neighborhood. So we're not anti-development. We're in favor of good development. In the Conway Master Plan area, we're going to see another 1,000 or more units in the foreseeable future. So we have lots of new housing, and we support it when it's done well. We don't have we're not parched for additional six-story apartment complexes. In fact, we're already drinking from a fire hose. So I would suggest to you that in this case, we should be very selective about where we put additional buildings, and that's the exact opposite of what we're doing. We're suggesting that it's just about anywhere is fine. So I would add to the opposition that we should continue to support the historic buildings in the neighborhood, keep the building we have, and figure out a way to have good development as opposed to wipe historic buildings off the planet and build additional six-story apartment complexes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next are Vicky Skyra, Paige Stockwell, and Joselle Johnson, and they'll be followed by Jill Warren, Robbie Mills, and Karen Carlson.
Good afternoon. Mayor and commissioners.
Welcome.
My name is Vicky Skria, and I live at 1728 Northwest Hoyt in one of the Trenkman homes directly across the street from the site. And I feel very honored to be in a historic property. I feel like our family moved in and we really tried to fix it up. We feel like we're part of a legacy that's saving historic properties so that the historic district can be preserved for others to enjoy for many years to come. It's a really special area. Actually, I was going to testify on a lot of the things that Commissioner Fish already asked questions about. My career, I have spent most of my professional life supporting affordable housing development for very low-income people, for people with special needs. That's been what I've committed myself to. I currently serve on the city's mixed-use zones policy advisory committee. In the past, I've been on a variety of different city and county committees and did work at the state of Oregon promoting housing for special needs populations. I just want to say that I think you can have both housing and historic preservation. I don't think they're mutually exclusive, and I think this site is exact example of where you can accomplish both housing and preservation. And I, like Commissioner Fish, looked really closely at the criteria that the applicants propose to use to apply to say that they're going to provide housing at 80% of median area income or area median income, AMI. And really where the need is, where the most units are needed, I know Commissioner Salzman, you know this too because you're over the Housing Bureau, is at that lowest level, like 50% of area median income and below. That's where the real needs are. And just simply providing more housing in an already the densest part of Portland, when you could do fewer units and do family units, such as a townhome project, which is suggested by the Historic Landmarks Commission, and in the staff report is an alternative. It's what the neighbors strongly advocated for at the first meeting, and instead of downscaling and providing a more acceptable design to most of us, we didn't even know how to react to what the developers were proposing because we really wanted to preserve the building and we wanted housing that was more in scale with our neighborhood. So when you're being asked what can we do to make the six-story building acceptable? It's sort of like you're left with your mouth open and you don't know what to say. So I do think it's somewhat ingenuous for the developers to say that they really got a lot of good input from the neighbors. So again, I don't think that the housing and the historic preservation have to be mutually exclusive. I'm very much in support of affordable housing in our area. We do have a lot of home-forward buildings within blocks of us, and I would be the first one to kind of accept, you know, try to work to get more of that available. Some of us have even approached the local church that's thinking of redeveloping one of the properties right across from the building to consider some kind of alternative development and have offered assistance to them in that. So I'll just leave it at that, and thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon or good evening. Thank you very much for taking the time to listen to us, Mayor Hales and City Commissioners. My name is Paige Stockwell. I'm on the Northwest District Association Board. I live in the Lewis Mills House at 2039 Northwest Irving Street in the heart of the historic Alphabet District. The house was built in 1916 and is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. I am opposed to the demolition of the historic Ballew and Wright building. Over the last 15 years, I have spent more than $100,000 restoring the house to what it was nearly 100 years ago. Construction centered on rebuilding and repair of a number of architectural features which had been removed or modified, much like this building, over the years. Among other things, this involved reconstructing the original entryway, reconstructing a widow's walk on the roof, installing working shutters, and rebuilding the interior staircase. I would like to point out that this is the same sort of restoration or preservation that a potential buyer could undertake or that the current owner could have undertaken during the 35 years of his stewardship of the Ballew and Wright building. Since the work on my house was largely cosmetic, I do not expect to realize any financial gain from this endeavor. So why am I doing this? And why am I here today? Especially since any replacement for Ballew and Wright will not impact me or my property directly. I'm making this effort because I was born and raised in Portland and have a great deal of respect for our city's heritage, reflected in many ways by the historic Alphabet District. Because I live in the district, I feel that it is my civic duty to contribute to it and help preserve it. The district is not simply a collection of buildings, as has been pointed out before, but it is a neighborhood, a fabric woven by the history and culture of our city. I have always been under the impression that City Hall understands this concept and embraces its civic duty in the same way as I do. If I am correct, then you should deny the application to demolish this historic building, which is an important part of the fabric of the city and the historic district. To do otherwise would be a betrayal of civic duty and would represent an unraveling of the neighborhood fabric. I can assure you that the building's destruction will be noted both locally and nationally. Does the city really want to throw away all of the work that went into the creation of the historic district and become a laughingstock in the country's historic preservation community? To coin a phrase, do we want to be known as the city that works or the city that shirks? I urge you to fulfill your civic duty and deny this application. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon.
Hi, my name's Joselle Johnson, and I'm actually a long-term resident of this community. I bought first here in 1990. I was a child prodigy and was able to do that. And then I was able to purchase my current house in 1992. I actually am on the southwest corner of 18th and Hoyt, and this property that we're under discussion is on the northwest corner of 18th and Hoyt. I have never been contacted by the development group, and despite the fact that I actually rent parking from them. One of the things that is very concerning to me is I chose this neighborhood because of its historic fabric. I bought my largest antique and proceeded to remodel 6,000 square feet. So I am also a multifamily housing owner. So when they talk about livable units, my units are over 1,500 square feet, and I chose to do that so I could maintain a community in our neighborhood. One of the things that I do want to talk about, and my house is the one up there that's being overshadowed by Park 19, which I, again, testified against, we are being overshadowed by these large six-plus story buildings coming in here where we no longer are a community fabric. We're pockets of historic neighbors. We're no longer these half-block blocks we're no longer seeing the mix of half block one buildings, but we're seeing the single families be overshadowed by these over housing. But let me get back to what I want to talk about. My colleague got off easy. He spent $100,000 of his own money. I spent well over $250,000 to put into this house. What I did is I followed the designs that were set out by the Zoning Commission and also set out by the permit requirements and et cetera. What is very frustrating to me as a long-term resident is have my colleagues continually purchase and develop these houses, these property, on speculation. The proposal that they have done is not something that can be done within the current groundwork. Well, they've owned the building for 30 years. I respect that. They bought the lot next to it for over $1 million within the last year. How are they able to buy these lots, make this investment, without being following the rules that the rest of us in the neighborhood are doing so? So they are basically investing their money, and then they tell me that they need to pencil it out by asking you for investments and housing that gives them money back. Where's the rules? I want to play by the same rules so that we're all on the investment and development of our community together. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Okay, next.
The next three are Jill Warren, Robbie Mills, and Karen Carlson. And they'll be followed by Juliet Himes, Wendy Rame, and Mary Zarnicki.
Good afternoon. Go ahead, Karen.
Robbie had to leave because he was sick. He's also
okay.
The neighbor that's directly closest to this and has purchased property to actually develop in the neighborhood as well. So I wanted to put that.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor, Council members. Thank you for your time. This is a long hearing here. I own the property directly across the street. I own the old church. And I've had it for about 22 years, and it was built in the late 1800s. While I do not command the high rents of new construction, what I do have is affordable housing. And my tenants consist of medical students, restaurant workers, young professionals, and artists. And I really feel, gee, I never considered them as Class C people, but, you know, I think that they definitely contribute to the vitality of the neighborhood. These medical students, they can't afford, you know, $4,000 a month in their rent. I oppose the demolition of the Ballow and Wright building because of my building is so delicate. I mean, I had to do a window repair last year, and it cost me $1,000. I had to get a master craftsman out there. I have to handle that building with kid gloves. The stained glass windows were brought over on a ship from Norway in the late 1800s, and I can't imagine if there's demolition across the street when it's Park 19. I want to correct my testimony I mailed in, but it's Park 19 was built. The pile driving for building the infrastructure loosened my plumbing, and both buildings I had leaks. I had to get a plumber out there to repair those leaks. If we have that type of demolition directly across the street, I am very fearful that it is going to permanently damage my stained glass and cause plumbing problems and who knows what else. And, you know, those stained glass windows are so valuable. And when you have an antique and you replace it or alter it in any way, the value plummets. And I'm just really fearful that not only will that compromise my structure, but also a huge six-story building across the street is going to put my building in perpetual shade. And that's one of the assets that I do have for my tenants is the beautiful light that comes in through those huge windows. People walk in to look at it and they go, wow, there's so much light here. And they really love it. So it would degrade my property. And I also feel that, you know, I want to reiterate that it would, if this is approved, this demolition, it's going to open the door that it's new open season for developers to just buy up historic landmarks and exploit them for profit. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I missed your name. Could you tell me again?
Jill Warren.
Thank you.
Jill, well, you have the slide that says affordable housing with long-term commitments. So that's what kind of tenants are those?
The tenants, well, they tenants, they last 2-3 years.
Oh, I see.
And they're young professionals, and a lot of them live in Hillsborough, but they choose to live in, or they work in Hillsborough, but they choose to live in Northwest. So.
Thank you. Karen, welcome.
Hi. Karen Carlson, 906 Northwest 23rd Avenue and 1905 Northwest Northrop. I both live and have a business in the neighborhood. I'm here as a board member of the NWDA, but I'm also here as an individual and a preservationist and someone who recently helped keep a historic building from demolition by purchasing the Bernard Goldsmith House. I had testimony that I was supposed to give, but so many people have said so many things. I just want to pop in on just a couple things. We've talked a lot about precedent, and I do think it's, although each is a case-by-case basis, you do go back and you do look at what was said before. Do I, therefore, you know, is my situation similar? And I think, you know, this is balancing the goals of the comprehensive plan. And I think the staff report does a really good job, and I urge you to go back and read it. They do a really good job of talking about how each of these goals is met or is not met, most of them not met. The Historic Alphabet District took 10 years or more in the making. It was a lot of work by a lot of people, and I do believe that the applicant should have been, if not, aware that this was happening. There was comment earlier, and I think you brought it up as well, the Landmarks Commission stated that they thought a 4-6 story building was not going to be compatible with the site. And in that conversation, it sort of led to, it would all come back to you anyway. And I think that what was meant by that was that at Landmarks, if you approve the demolition, they will go back with the development at Landmarks. If the development is what they have proposed to date, I think it's going to be a very difficult discussion. And I don't think that Landmarks won't work and negotiate, but if it is not enough to make their economic model, they will come back to you asking you to balance the economic model with, again, the preservation of the neighborhood. In historic districts, you do infill and new construction that has to be compatible. There's a lot of code around its compatibility. And its compatibility is not just from a broader sense of the whole historic district, but it's also in context. And I think you've heard some of that today because some of those properties that are very nearby are not six-story buildings, where some of the other five-story buildings have been added into the neighborhood. This context is different. Really quickly, one last thing. I think, Commissioner Fish, you were the one who asked the question of is RH the correct zoning in this area? And I think one of the things that is a disconnect that has led developers to think that they can build more, but Landmarks says no, is that we haven't really matched up the zoning to the historic district. We established the historic district, and unlike others, there's a lot of diversity. Just because there's a five-story building in the district doesn't mean every new development can be a five-story building and is thus compatible. I think we do need to take a second look and step back. We're really busy in Northwest. We've kind of been wanting to do this as part of our comprehensive plan comments, but haven't. So I'm not sure that RH is the correct zoning here. Certainly multifamily, and I think there's a lot of multifamily options, and I think I've gone over my time. Sorry.
I think that was Charlie's question, but I appreciate
the answer.
The council appreciates the answer.
Yeah. No, thank you. And let's do a process check here. The council has had a very long day, and there's going to be an event here in the building at 6 o'clock, and I know we're going to need to adjourn by then. So if people don't collapse first. So where are we in the sign-up sheet? And no, I've got my staff looking at options for what we might do here procedurally, but where are we?
I show about 13 more.
Okay, 13 more people signed up.
So, Mayor, we have a general practice here of we don't really give extra weight to volume of testimony. So if we hear the same thing multiple times, it doesn't make it more compelling. at a stage like this, it's actually more helpful to hear an argument that we haven't heard to make sure it's in the record. But this has been an unusually thoughtful hearing, and I think people have laid out the case pretty well. I would say if we're going to take additional testimony, I would urge people to offer something new or just to second something they've heard, but not necessarily make it duplicative in the record, because there's no benefit to the process of having 20 people say the same thing. We get the point.
Dan, you have some.
Like you said, it has been a long day. I'm not sure I'm thinking cohesively. I would prefer if we could continue this hearing.
What are you checking on in terms of dates?
Yes.
So.
Well, except that the applicant had a very long time to give their presentation, which I think was over an hour. Those folks here have been here a very long time waiting for their turn.
No, I hear that. I'm not considering an option that we just cut off the hearing. The question is, when do we hear people? When is it now, later, or both? So that's what I'm trying to ascertain here. So my suggestion would be we maybe take 3 to 6 more people and see where we stand. Can we do that? Get to 5:30 and then take another stamina check?
Well, and the other thing, Mayor, we have, as you noted, we went through virtually with no lunch break today, so we've been at this since 9:30. That's not your problem. That's just, but there is, during a hearing like this, where people are talking about precedent and making very thoughtful issues of first impression for many of us, there is a benefit to having that soak in and to ponder
it,
and not at our most fatigued moment, just giving you a reaction. I think you're asking for something more than that. So.
Oh, yeah. At the very least, I would assume that we might save the applicant's rebuttal and council deliberation for another day. But the question is whether we soldier on through the remaining testimony.
And that's to honor the process, Mayor, not to defer.
Exactly.
It gives you our best shot.
So I think you all want us to be relatively fresh when we think about this and decide it, regardless of which side of the issue you're on.
Might I suggest we take another 15 minutes of testimony because of the event to follow, and then schedule another time?
They're working on a time certain. Okay, let's do that. Let's proceed with the next three and see if we can get it done in 15 minutes. So wait a second, Lenny. Who are the next three, Carla?
Next three are Juliet Himes, Wendy Rom, and Mary Zarnecki.
Okay.
And they'll be followed by Crystal Olinsky, Jim Hewer, and Rich Overberg.
Okay. Good evening.
Hi. Good afternoon. My name is Juliet Himes. I live at 2324 Northwest Marshall, and I'm vice president of the Northwest District Association. And I don't think I'm saying anything you have already heard today. I've been asked to talk about historic preservation and sustainability, and it's not nearly as wonky as some of what the other people have been talking to. So
should I take the full time?
I would just, shouldn't be too challenging.
We're going to continue the hearing, so take the whole time because you've been here and you always have something thoughtful to say.
Thanks. So most of this is cited from the National Institute of Building Sciences. Historic buildings are inherently sustainable. Preservation maximizes the use of existing materials and infrastructure, reduces waste, and preserves historic character. As staff mentions, it also saves energy embedded in existing buildings, which, for the record, is the sum of all the energy required to extract, process, deliver, and install the materials needed to construct it. That energy is squandered if the building is demolished. Furthermore, according to the EPA, building-related construction and demolition debris totals nearly 40% of the municipal solid waste stream. Some estimates are even higher than that, up to 60 I saw today. With some exceptions, existing buildings reduce climate impact over the newly built. Additionally, findings suggest that even sustainably constructed new built structures do not recoup energy outlays for approximately 30 years. Compared to renovated existing buildings. Therefore, reusing older buildings offers immediate and lasting environmental benefits. Furthermore, historic buildings were traditionally designed with sustainable features that responded to climate and site. When effectively restored and reused, these features can save substantial amounts of energy, and modern technology can supplement inherent sustainable features without compromising historic character. For example, operable historic windows, louvers, and monitors substantially reduce demand for heating and cooling during temperate months. Windows built of old-growth wood can function indefinitely, and their efficiency can be substantially bolstered to resemble that of new insulated glass windows. And in contrast, some modern windows have a relatively short lifespan and can be difficult, if not impossible, to repair. Once they fail, they're hard to recycle and usually end up in the landfill. Properly designed awnings can reduce heat gain. Existing deep overhangs provide shade during the hottest part of the day, while allowing in sunlight during cold months and cooler parts of the day. Overhangs also keep roof drainage away from building foundations, often negating the need for gutters and downspouts. Original high ceilings, which may not be the case here, allow air to circulate, and the masonry can maintain the inner temperature quite efficiently. I'll just conclude, historic preservation and sustainability offer numerous public benefits and can work together. Preserving the Ballow and Wright building is a perfect opportunity to apply both principles. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Ms. Rom, welcome.
Hi, I'm Wendy Rom. Excuse me. Thank you very much for sticking around and letting me speak. I speak from a different perspective. I'm not a resident of the Northwest, but I am here as one who values Portland's history. I therefore recommend denial of the demolition request for the historic Ballow Wright building, an Alphabet Historic District building with the National Register status of a contributing building, which you've heard. The status is hard won, and it is of value to all Portland residents. Allowing the demolition of this contributing building would set a very bad precedent. As a once neighborhood maternity hospital associated with Mrs. Spaulding, it is a signifier of women's history in Portland. It is not insignificant for Portland's women and young girls. Buildings are prompts for storytelling that help us tell children of the past we share. That contributing status was agreed to, as I understand it, by the current owner, or should have been. It seems disingenuous now to claim ignorance of the granting of that status and to have allowed the building to fall into disrepair with the hope of being allowed to demolish it. What is the benefit of demolition? Not sustainability. The greenest building is the existing building that is readapted for modern uses. So who would benefit? Residents, history lovers, or moneyed interests looking for greater profits? It seems to me an ill-advised precedent by City Council to endorse a pattern of neglect by an owner of a historic property. This building is across the street from very small, individually registered, architecturally significant single-family homes, and its character and scale are in keeping with the historic district. As a concerned resident of the West End, I fear we may not be paying enough attention to the preservation of Portland's historic fabric. The authenticity of these old buildings cannot be replicated. What so often seems to replace them are context-insensitive, characterless buildings that add nothing to the street level or pedestrian experience. The old buildings are what make Portland a standout city in the eyes of outsiders. Our past needs to be part of our future. It is who we are, and the more we lose, the poorer we become. Portland begins to lose its identity and its soul. I urge you to deny this demolition. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Czarnecki, good evening.
Yes, hi. I'm Mary Czarnecki of 2742 Northwest Xavier in Portland and a principal at New Traditional Architecture. Today I'm here to read into the record a portion of the written testimony of John Czarnecki, AIA, past chair of the Portland Historic Landmarks Commission, who writes, and I may ask for a couple more minutes because John's words are quite heavily weighted, but I think very valuable. Dear Mayor Hales and Commissioners, this testimony strongly supports the preservation and rehabilitation of the Buck Prager Building. Mayor Hales sat on the council during the adoption of the historic resource code amendments that enabled this review process. These amendments emerged from a negotiated balance of incentives, regulations, and encouraged conservation and the use of designated historic resources. I am privileged to have chaired the Landmarks Commission at that time. The following points may inform today's discussion. The building has not lost its architectural integrity. The exterior can be repaired by understanding the physical and photographic evidence of original character and making compatible improvements. Conditions resulting from neglect can be reversed. The actual cost of demolition must be measured in relationship to the economic benefits of historic conservation that support genuine long-term sustainability. Including in the written testimony before you is one recent exhaustive study outlining the means and methods of determining comprehensive economic value of preserving historic resources. Some of the costs arise from energy required for demolition and new construction, including long-term costs of carbon footprint, including that arising from manufacturing, transportation, and construction process, the loss of energy and long embodied within the existing structure, and the loss of existing proven livability.